Hello, this is Ilana Goldstein-Sachs of Web Yeshiva with this week's Trasar podcast. In our last podcast, we took a look at the psukim in which the Navi Amos says a number of statements directed towards various other nations, listing some of their worst transgressions, which they had done sometime in the past. And we saw at the end that really the purpose of this list wasn't so much to tell off the nations, because of these transgressions that they had done, which, although that is accomplished, the real purpose was in order to eventually get to the transgressions of Israel and listing all of these other nations' transgressions, including, I might add, the transgressions of Malchut Yehuda, the southern kingdom of Yehuda, which of course is part of Am Yisrael, but is not the audience to whom Amos was speaking. All of the entire list was in order to get to Yisrael, the last person, the last nation on the list. And listing all of them was a way of kind of roping in the audience, the unwilling audience who wasn't really interested in hearing what Amos had to say, kind of like a way of attracting their attention so that by the time he gets to Yisrael, and their transgressions, they're already, hooked, and they're already listening to him, and then he has an opportunity to say that which he really had come to say. So we're going to look today at the beginning of the list. The list of Yisrael's transgressions is actually longer than the others that we looked at. We're not going to look at all of it today, but we're going to start with the first. So we are now in Amos, Perek Bet, Pasuk Vav. Ko amar Hashem, al shalosha pish'ei Yisrael, ve'al arba'a lo ashivenu, al michram ba'kesef tzadik, ve'evyon ba'avur na'alayim. What exactly is being referred to here? Al michram ba'kesef tzadik, on that they sold for money a tzadik, a righteous person. There's a number of ways that this could be understood. If you take a look at the Da'at Mikar commentary, a number of suggestions are offered, and it makes clear that there are all sorts of possibilities as to what evil these people in Malchut Yisrael were doing. So one possibility, like who is the tzaddik that we're referring to here? What is the context, and in what way is he being sold? So one possibility is if you look at, for example, Shmot Perek Gimel Pasuk Chet, which conveniently happens to be from Parashat HaShavua, so you get a little bit of Parsha in here as well. It says, V'shochad lo tikach, ki ha-shochad ye'aver pikchim ve'yisalef divrei tzadikim. Right, you should not take bribes, right, this is directed towards judges, because bribes make the blinds people whose eyes are open, right? Pikach literally means have your eyes open. It also means to be smart, both being fitting for a good judge. It blinds the person whose eyes are open. Vayisalev divrei tzadikim, and it twists the words of the tzadikim. Now, one might think that the tzadik here is referring to the judge, so you could say that the judge is kind of selling out. But then in that case, it's not Yisrael who's doing it, it's the judge that's doing it. One could understand it that way, but most Mefarshim, if you look at the Mefarshim on the Pasuk in the Book of Shemot, understand Ve'isalef divrei tzadikim means that the bribery twists the words of the tzadikim, meaning the ones who are correct, are righteous, are innocent in whatever court case was being brought before this judge that's being bribed. The tzaddik in this case, in the pasuk and Shmot, is the innocent person who is being ruled against unjustifiably. So going back to our pasuk, Amicham bekesef tzaddik, that they would sell the tzaddik, meaning the innocent righteous person by giving the judge bribery to rule against him. So that's one possibility. Another possibility suggested in the Da'at Mikra commentary is that the people who are being sold are tzaddikim, they're righteous people who find themselves in a very difficult situation. Essentially, good people who had to steal because they had no choice. Right? This is like reminiscent of the famous Heinz dilemma. Right? Question about ethical question. Right? If somebody steals, to buy medicine, should they be punished? Right, meaning that they stole because they had no choice. They were terribly poor. Somebody was dying. They have to buy medicine for them. Should they be punished for stealing in this case? Right, a famous ethical quandary. So in this case, who are the tzaddikim who are being sold? It's that the people in Israel would tell on these people, these generally righteous people who had to steal because they had no choice. And in the end, they are sold into slavery in order to pay off their debt. Right? This, of course, is the classical case of, but it's a case of an Eved Ivri. An Eved Ivri is somebody who stole and does not have money to repay what they stole, so he is sold into slavery to pay off his debt. Interestingly, also from this week's parasha, so another bit of parasha for you, and that is who, this is the righteous people, according to the second possibility, who are being sold by the people of Israel, according to our pasuk. So this case is even more interesting because, on the one hand, you could say, well, these people did steal, but on the other hand, as brought to light by the fact that this is a famous ethical question, so it's possible that this person, in the end of the day, should be punished if for stealing, but do you need to be the person to turn in such a person? Right, you have to be so self-righteous that you have to turn in this poor person who has to steal to save their dying relative, or whatever it might be. Right, so again, it says something about the people of Israel, if indeed this is what is the scenario that is being described by Amos, the words, Amicham Bekesef Tzadik. The third possibility, also from this week's parasha, is found in Shmot, Perek Kaf Aleph, Pasuk, Tet Zain, where it says, V'gonev ish u'mecharo, v'nimtza biyado mot yumat. Right? And this is a case of kidnapping. If you steal a person, a human being, and you sell the person, so then you this is a capital crime. You were killed for this. So here, this is another possibility of understanding Amichram Bekesef Tzadik. Why this person would be referred to specifically as a tzaddik, I don't know, other than unless we're talking about generally another crime done against a perfectly innocent person that was done by Malchut Yisrael. Whichever case we're talking about, whatever the pshat is of what Amichram Bekesef Tzadik means, none of these are good, right? None of this says anything good about the people of Israel, according to Amos. The second half of the pasuk, right, ve'evyon ba'avur na'alayim, right, on the simplest level, the simplest meaning is just the parallel second half of the pasuk, as we often see in biblical poetry and biblical prophecy. Right, the second half of the pasuk is parallel to the first half, basically saying the same idea. Right, they sold a righteous person for money and a poor person for shoes. Or for na'alayim. We'll see what na'alayim means in a minute. The simplest, easiest way to say it is for shoes. So one way of understanding that is that they would sell a person, again, be it the bribes, be it any of the things that we described a moment ago, the different ways of understanding the first half of the pasuk, and they did this. Why were they doing this? Why were they selling these people? They were doing it in order to buy shoes. So one possibility is that shoes, because a very cheap, basic thing, right? So even for something so trivial as a pair of shoes, they're willing to sell a human being. That's one way of understanding it. I forgot to mention, by the way, that many of these ideas are reminiscent, or at least some of them are reminiscent of things that we saw among the other nations, right? Meaning the transgressions that were mentioned by Amos with regard to the other nations. For example, we saw some of the nations being some of the transgressions that the other nations did were that they were selling, they would be selling slaves, or they'd be returning slaves to their master. So here too, we saw the idea of selling a person into slavery, or causing them to be sold into slavery. Or another way of interpreting those same psukim with regard to the nations was that they were kidnapping people and selling them, not necessarily returning them, returning slaves. And so there too, it's similar to what we saw earlier. We will see in a moment that there are some other similarities as well as we continue trying to understand this pasuk. Right, so the first possibility was that the Evyom Bavor Nalayim, that even for something as silly as a pair of shoes, as cheap as a pair of shoes, for those few shekel, you're willing to sell a human being. Another way of looking at it is the exact opposite. Right, the Daska shoes back in antiquity were something very significant. Right, to have a good pair of shoes was a status symbol. And so then you have to kind of look at this in the other way, that because you so desired the status symbol, because this luxury was so important to you, you were willing to sell a human being. So here, it's not something trivial. It's definitely something important, but nevertheless, right, the message might be that even for something like that, this thing which you covet so much, you don't sell a human being. You don't do something so terrible as those various things that we suggested for the first half of the pasuk. It's just not something that you do. In that way of thinking, that we're talking about something more significant, right? Not a cheap, nothing pair of shoes, but something that's like that you really want, that you have to do this terrible thing in order to get the thing that you desire so much. Along that line of thinking, you can look at the Perush of Rashi. Rashi says, he quotes Targum Yonatan. He says, "Ve'evyon ba'avor na'alayim Targum Yonatan b'shnei mekomot b'dil di'yachsenun." Right, he understands the words ba'avor na'alayim b'dil di'yachsenun, which means. Bedil means like in order to, diyachsenun, like from the word yachas, right, to connect things. So what does this mean? Va'omer ani, Rashi continues, shekach pirusho, matin mishpat evyon, kidei sheyitzarech limkor sadehu, shehaya lo ben sadot hadayanin, v'ze okef alav, v'notla v'damim kalim, kidei ligdor v'linol kol sodav stotav yachad. Velo yafsik b'nehem. Right, so what was going on here? Conveniently, the dayanim, right, the judges in this case, had fields, right, that happened to be on the two sides of a field owned by this poor person who is involved in this court case, and so they would pervert justice in order that this person be forced to sell his field, which is between the two other fields, and that way they would be able to connect all of the fields together in order to increase their property. One imagines that this also could be explained in terms of the people giving the bribes, right? That they want the field to have to be sold, so that they, not the judges, but they, the people giving the bribes, would be able to connect the fields together, right? I mean, you might have caught that Rashi. The word that Targum Yonatan translates as diyachsenun, right, to connect together, he understands ba'avor na'alayim, not milashon na'al, not talking about a shoe, but like lin'ol, right, to lock together. And so the evyon ba'avor na'alayim means that they would sell off the poor person in order to being able to connect together all of the fields. Right? This is reminiscent of the story of Kerem Navot in the book of Melachim Aleph, where Achav is convinced by Achav really wants the field of Navot, but Navot doesn't want to sell it to him, and Achav kind of is glum about this, and his wife Izebel says to him, you know, go there and be a proper king and, you know, get it for yourself. And she makes a exactly the situation that we're seeing here. She makes a court case, which is, you know, not a real one. It's kind of like a show. They judge Navot as being guilty, and as such, he is killed, and Achav is able to take his field, the field that was right next to his own field, and he was not able to take earlier because Nabot didn't want to sell it, you know, in order to make his field bigger. Right? Eliyahu, at the end of the story, says to Achav the famous statement, Haratzachta v'gam yarashta, right? You're going to murder and you're also going to inherit the field. So in the case here, so we don't seem to be murdering, at least not in this pasuk, anybody. This Evyon is not being murdered, but this Evyon is being sold. And as we learn from the story of Yosef, and Yehuda's statement to his brothers that they shouldn't kill Yosef, right? Rather, let's sell him to Egypt, right? And we'll see in a moment that there is a connection between our pasuk and the story of Yosef and his brothers. We learn from that story that yes, it's correct that one should not kill one's brothers, but if there's anything that was learned from that story, is that you shouldn't sell your brother as a slave to Egypt either. So true, in our pasuk, nobody's being killed, but the person is being sold, right? So it still doesn't say anything great about the people of Israel. The Radak suggests something a little bit different, but also interesting in its own right. First he starts, ba'avor na'alayim, afilu ba'avor na'alayim, she'itnu la'shofet yated din ha'avyon she'haya zakai v'dinov v'noten ha'shochad. Who zakai b'mishpatehem? Right. So here, it's not the briber, but again the bribee, the judge who is getting shoes. And according to the Radak, it's like the first explanation that we gave, that even for something as little, afilu b'avur na'alayim, even for something as little as shoes, you're willing to do this. Then he goes on, v'yonatan tirgem. Right. He's quoting Targum Yonatan the way that Rashi did. B'dil diyachsenun. And then he quotes Rashi, but then he suggests his own his own explanation. Davar acher mechayvin et hazakai kedei sheitzarech ani limkor sadeo bekinyan gamur shehu banaal sheneemar shalaf ish na'alo. So he says, you know, once again we're talking about a case where justice is being perverted, and this is done in order that the poor person be forced to sell his field, right, to completely sell off his field, which was done using a na'al, using a shoe. And then he quotes the pasuk from Megillat Rut, right, Shneimar shalaf ish na'alo. Now in that case, in Megillat Rut, right, the story is that the question is, who's going to redeem the field? And it's connected, of course, to the idea of who's going to marry Rut, and in that way, redeem everything that needs to be redeemed in the family of Elimelech, in the family of Naomi. So there, Ploni Almoni decides that he doesn't want to do the job, and he basically sells off his field to Boaz, sells off his rights to the field to Boaz, who does the right thing in the story, by redeeming the field as well as marrying Ruth. So according to Radak, right, basically he's looking from the perspective of Ploni Almoni. Ploni Almoni is selling off the field, you know, and this is done by the Na'al, right? There was a, in the story in Ruth, you're probably familiar, where the redemption of the fields, right, the transfer of the field from Ploni Almoni to Boaz, is done by taking off the shoe in a ceremony similar to Chalitza, right, what a person does if they're not performing Yibum, with a woman who, a childless woman whose husband who has died. So according to the Radak, apparently this is some ceremony that was done anytime a person is selling off a field. And usually, by selling off a field, this is something, in the words, in the case of Ploni Almoni, he wanted to do this. He wanted Boaz to take over, but the Radak is drawing a situation of where somebody doesn't want to do it and is forced to sell off their field. And apparently, according to the Radak, anyway, this was done also using the Nile. So, the Evyon ba'avor na'alayim, according to the Radak, possibly is that the person has to, the poor person is forced to sell off. They sell off the poor person, right, like the tzaddik, ba'avor na'alayim, in order that he be forced to sell his field using this na'al. Again, another situation where a poor person is being put into a very negative situation, you know, for the benefit of the others. which is the actual pshat, I will leave you to decide. What is fascinating to me about this last possibility, right, this connection to this na'al and the ceremony of taking off the na'al, is that this idea shows up in other sources that are somehow connected to this pasuk, but in different ways. And so it's always so interesting when one pasuk one idea keeps reappearing in different ways. So one case of a source which brings this in is a rather unusual source, I will admit, not a typical midrash. And the source I'm talking about is Tzava'at Zevulun. Right, there's a book in the pseudepigrapha, right, the Sfarim, among the Sfarim Chitzoniim, the books that were not included in our Tanakh, but which nevertheless often share many ideas and motifs that are found in our Midrashim. And in one of them, there is the testaments given by the sons of Yaakov at the end of their lives. And so in the testament for Zvulun, which I'll read to you in English, Zvulun is talking about the sale of Yosef, and he says, "For in his price I had no share, meaning I didn't take from the money that we got for selling him, my children, but Shimon and Gad and six others of our brethren too, the price of Joseph, and bought sandals for themselves and their wives and their children, saying, 'We will not eat of it, for it is the price of our brother's blood, but we assuredly tread it underfoot, because he said that he would be king over us.'" Right. So here, Zvulun is describing that some of the brothers took the money that they were given for the sale of Yosef, and they brought shoes. Right. This is clearly based on our pasuk. Right. And of course, this is found in the midrash as well. Right. And not incidentally, this section from Amos is the haftarah for the Parashat Vayeshev, where the story of the sale of Yosef takes place, that when it says Amichram bekesef tzaddik, the tzaddik is of course referring to Yosef HaTzaddik, right? That it was Yosef HaTzaddik sale into slavery that is being referred to here, and as we'll see in a moment in another source that we look at, that sale kind of becomes like the original sin of Am Yisrael, if you pardon the expression, right? It's a sin that never goes away. It comes back to haunt them for generations to come, and we'll see that in a moment. But here, so Zvulun is saying that we did not want to eat from that money. They did not want to eat from that money because, after all, it was blood money. But we did use it to buy shoes because he had said, Yosef had said that he would be king over us. And so instead we are, you know, as if we are treading him underfoot. Now this is interesting because the very next pasuk, after the one that we've been studying in Amos, says that the next thing that the people wanted to do, the people did, the next chet sin that they did, Hashoafim al afar aretz berosh dalim. Right, that they trample upon the heads of the poor people. Right, so it could be that this sentence in Tzava'at Zvulun is referring to that pasuk, not only to the pasuk that we've been studying, right, Amichram bekesef tzaddik, ba'avur na'alayim, but also on the trampling upon the heads underfoot. He goes on, and so let us see what will become of his dreams. Right, that's why we trampled on him. Right, it's saying about Yosef, let's see what happened to these dreams that he would become king over us. Therefore, it is written in the writing of the law of Moses that whoever will not raise up seed to his brother, his sandal should be unloosed, and they should spit in his face. Right. So, because of what the brothers did, right, according to this explanation of Zvulun in Tzava'at Zvulun, that is why you have the law of Chalitza. Right, that when a person does not do yibum, right, when the person refuses to marry the wife of his brother, when the couple was left childless after the brother died, you know, they have to perform chalitza, and this is done by taking off the shoe and spitting, right? And from the psukim and the Torah, it's clear that the person who does chalitza back in those days, it's different in these days where it's agreed that chalitza has to be done, but back in those days, the person who did chalitza was looked down upon, right? Because they are not willing to raise up the seed of his brother, meaning to take responsibility for the continuation of the line of his brother. Right? So it's very interesting that here the na'al is being associated with this with chalitza. Now we saw already a connection to this in the second explanation brought by the Radak, where he too connects, although in a much more distant way, right, not connecting it directly to chalitza, but to this idea of the need to sell a field, and the ceremony of taking off the shoe, right? So already in two sources we see this reference on one level, excuse me, on one level or another, to chalitza. What is interesting, these references to the idea of chalitza, is that chalitza, the whole idea, as I just mentioned, is about lack of responsibility for brothers. Acting towards brothers in a way that one shouldn't act towards a brother. And that essentially could be what is the bottom line of what Amos is trying to say. Right? All of these terrible things that you, Yisrael, are doing, you're doing to other people from your very own nation, to your own brothers. So that what you're doing is 10 times worse because you're doing it to your own. And this is similar to what we saw in the list of the transgressions of the other nations, right? That it talks about Edom doing something against his brother, in that case, Israel, or Tzor doing something against Israel and not remembering Brit Achim, right? That they were like brothers, that they had a treaty amongst themselves, right? So here too, Israel is doing the same thing by doing all of these terrible transgressions, Ben Adam L'Chaveiro, right? And Amos, as we've seen over and over again, is almost the entire book is almost all about transgressions of Ben Adam L'Chaveiro, of one person against another. The bottom line is you're doing these awful, awful things, and you're doing it to your own brothers, right? And that's the reference to chalitza that we just saw, and of course the reference as well to in the midrash to the sale of Yosef, right? Perhaps the original example of not taking responsibility for one's own brother. And this is all brought together in the famous midrash, which talks about the Asara Harugei Malchut, right? The story which is most familiar, perhaps, from what we read on Yom Kippur afternoon, during Musaf, right? It's in a liturgical form, the story of the Asara Harugei Malchut who were killed, right? The 10 rabbis who were killed by the Romans. And here it is found in the Midrash. Pam achat haya yoshev osek b'Torah. Right, the Kesar, the Roman king, is learning Torah. Right, this is definitely a Midrash. Umatza katuv v'gonev ish umecharo. It says there that he's found the pasuk. He learned the pasuk that if a person steals another person, meaning kidnaps him and sells him, that he gets death. He is his punishment is death. Right? Recall that this is one of the interpretations of Al Micham Bekesef Tzadik that we saw earlier. V'halach v'tach habayit kulo b'na'alayim v'davkam b'kotalim. He hung na'alayim all over the walls. V'shalach achar Rabban Yoshimon ben Gamliel v'chayverav. He called Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel and company, the other chachamim. V'amar lahem mi sheganav ish mi b'nei Yisrael v'halach u'macharo madino. What's the law for kidnapping and selling the kidnapped person? Amru lo chayav mita. They said he's punished by death. Amar lahem im ken atem chayav mita. Kablu al atzmechem din shamayim. If that's the case, says the Kesar, you have to be put to death. Accept this upon yourself. Amru lo lama. Well, why? Amar lahem bishvil achei Yosef shemachru et Yosef. Dichtiv veyimkiru et Yosef. Uchtiv al michram bekesef tzadik veevyon ba'avor na'alayim. V'lachein tachoto rasha et abay demin alim. Kidei sheyakiru be'ezo davar macharo et Yosef kasher sheneemar ba'avor na'alayim. B'dimei na'alayim. Right? So he says, it says in the story that Yosef's brothers sold him, kidnapped him essentially, and sold him. And he hung up all of the na'alayim all over the place to emphasize this. V'chi adam yafek ki Yosef ayu mochvim oto be'svim kasef. sorry, then it goes on to explain all sorts of things of what happened to Yosef while he was in the Bor. I'm not going to read the whole story right now. So the Kesar HaRasha says, so you're guilty, you have to be put to death. Amrulo im achei Yosef machru acheihem anu ma pashanu umatarogotanu. See, they're like, what did we do? Right? This happened generations ago. Why do we have to be killed? Amar lahem im hayu achei Yosef hayom bechayim hayiti tofsam vaoseh bahem din. Achshav she'inam bechayim eseh bachem din shatem shkulim kachei Yosef v'mechirato. Right? You are equal to the sons of to the 10 brothers, by which he probably means they are the 10 representatives of the people. You are 10 important people of the nation right now. If they were around still, I would put them to death, but they're no longer alive, so I'll put you to death instead. We know, of course, that according to the Torah, this is not done. You don't put one person to death for the sins of another person, but yet we're not talking about the Roman Caesar, who was not seen as a great tzaddik. Justice is not what we're searching for here. Amrulo, ten lanu zman, shlosha yamim ad shenedayim gzeira zu ba min hashamayim. Nekabel aleinu din shamayim. Right, let's go, we're going to go think about it and decide if this is truly from God, this decree. Noten lehem zman shlosha yamim, v'nikpetsu halalu harugei machut ve'ele hain. Right, and they come together after 3 days, and they all gather together, the 10 harugei machut, and it lists the names of the 10 harugei machut. Elo hen asara harugei machut shenehargu al shemachru et Yosef. Right, a powerful, terrible story in so many ways, to which we do not have time to dedicate enough time to it, other than to mention that we have here in this midrash the coming together of many things that we've seen. The story of Mechirat Yosef, the pasuk from Amos, the pasuk that we've been looking at, and this theme of responsibility, taking responsibility for brothers. Not only in the sense that the Asara Harugei Machut are being forced to take responsibility for what the others did before them, but not even so much in that sense, although the theme fits there as well. But one has to wonder as well if perhaps there's some sort of hint to what was going on during the time of the Asara Harugei Machut as well. Right? It's famous that in the days of Bayit Sheni and later on the days of Rabbi Akiva that relationships Ben Adam v'Chaverah were not Am Yisrael's strong point. That this was a problem of that time. And while I'm loath to say that these 10 tzaddikim were responsible for them, I don't think that they were the ones who did it, but perhaps the Midrash is hinting that during their time this was a problem, and that in a certain sense the leadership is the one who has to take responsibility for bad things that are going on at the time. Again, not saying that these people did it themselves. So once again we see in the third time period an example of Am Yisrael not treating each other properly, brothers doing bad things to brothers, brothers not taking responsibility for brothers, and that last example during the time of Asara Harugei Machut being connected back to the time of Amos and connected back again to the time of Yosef. And that essentially is ultimately again what is going on in the pasuk in Amos, that the worst part of what was going on during the time of Amos was that these terrible things were going on and that they were doing it one to the other, brother against brother, and ultimately Amos is saying this is what is leading to the downfall of the people. In our next podcast, we will continue the list of the transgressions that Yisrael were doing during the time of Amos and what he has to say about them.